Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. Today, I am your host, Jess Baker, and joining me as my co-host is the top dog himself, Mark Rader. Welcome, Mark.
Oh, thanks, Jess.
How are you going? What's new? Tell me all of the things.
What's new? Well, the big thing in my life is that the NHL playoffs started the other day. So,
and the NHL is the hockey.
Yes. Great. The National
Good.
Hockey League.
Just confirming for all the listeners at home who have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, surely.
And how is it going?
Well, the only four games have been played. The home team has lost all four. My team doesn't start until Friday.
The Maple Leafs.
Yes.
I am incredible.
See, you're doing great. So yeah, no, I'm just looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll get out of the first round this year. So that's the big news. So
that's very exciting.
What about yourself? I noticed that the reference to the top dog was what you went with. So I don't know if that was, intentional or not, I hear that there's another top dog in your life?
There is a top dog in my life, and I'm loving it so much. I picked up little Huxley last week for listeners following along at home, and it's just been such a glorious time of just so much sleep and just all good things.
A little bit of anxiety in the
Huxley? Just a little bit of anxiety. Yeah, just in Huxley and myself, which is fine. We're just playing off each other. I'm learning lots of skills for parenting, I think. Lots of patience, how not to yell at your child for weeing on the rug. just lots of good skills, yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Loving it.
Hopefully you'll kind of get through today.
I'm kind of a breaking point. So if you could carry this, that would be great. I'm here. Huxley's being babysat in the other room by Kat. I'm just loving this. It's good. It's a good time.
But did anyone else see this coming or like?
I certainly didn't. Look, it's harder than I thought. And I've had a dog before, so I should have known exactly what it was like. But here we are, guys. For those, I'm just going to keep you updated week to week on whether, I've been crying in a corner or whether it's a good day for me. Today's not a great day, but.
All right. Well, it's a good thing that this is just voice rather than video.
Yeah, for sure, because I'm not looking my best. Thanks for pointing that out, Mark. All righty. Well, let's move on. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Matt Willis, who preached at our evening service this past Sunday. Mark and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. For those of you who missed it, like myself, who was at home babysitting a dog, Matt continued in our series following Jesus in the Gospel of John. You can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But for now, Mark, I'm interested in what your take-home message was from Matt's sermon.
Well, I mean, I thought he did a great job. My barometer is my daughters. So I asked them how they think things go and they were very optimistic and positive as well. So
very
I'm like,
good.
Well, then he must have done well, even apart from my own evaluation. I thought the central kind of a focus, and this is part of what some of the questions that we're going to be dealing with, was wrapped around that our following Jesus starts where we are. We don't actually have to get up to some sort of starting line or kind of achieve something to be able to begin. Mm. And I thought that was a great point. I think, I don't know how other people responded to that, but I think that's something we often struggle with. It's like, I can't start until, I've got to, it's that whole, you get a house cleaner, but then you clean the house so the cleaner can clean the house. It's kind of like, I see it as, no, if you get a cleaner, you start with where I am.
Right now my house looks terrifying, so I would have to clean it for a cleaner.
But I've never kind of quite understood that part. We get a cleaner, but we clean so that the cleaner can clean. So I don't, at any rate, I'm not sure if that makes a really clear connection, but we'll go from there.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. I've always loved that imagery of the this light, especially when you're talking about the lighthouse on the hill and how we're kind of drawn to that and called to follow that. And as someone who is afraid of the dark, I love a good nightlight. So I really love that imagery.
Yep.
Alrighty. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the big three questions submitted through Slido this week. So Mark, what are the questions we've got?
Well, I've got three here. Why do we end up focusing on us as followers rather than the light that we are following? If we start following Jesus where we are at what point should there be some change in our lives? In other words, when should we begin thinking about ourselves as followers? Mm-hmm. So it's all well and good to start where we are, but eventually we should start thinking about what it looks like.
Yeah.
And then even a little bit of light makes a difference in the dark, and a bright light in the darkness can almost be blinding. So how do we focus on the light of Jesus without blinding ourselves? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like if he's the light of the world, where, like, how do we start kind of figuring that out so we can see where we're going,
yeah.
I guess, in terms of discipleship?
For sure. Very good questions. Well, I'm sure, Mark, you could answer these all by yourself, but let's bring in the person who preached the sermon. Matt, welcome.
What an intro. Actually, this person's completely redundant because we've already got Mark Rayner, but he's sitting in the room anyway, so we might as well say something.
Let's bring him in.
Otherwise, it's heaps awkward.
No, you're a blessing to have, Matt. We can't wait for your insights. How does it feel being in the preacher's seat?
Listen, it's fun. It's a time. I mean, gone are the days where you could just prepare a sermon and then that be the end of the process. So now you've kind of got to keep thinking about it. Just before, Jess was kind of asking me about the sermon and I'd completely forgotten what I preached on, and Mark actually had to give a little outline about what the sermon was. So I'm hoping that won't be the case here today, but we do have Radar as our little safety net in case I just go completely off my book.
Yeah. I'm enjoying raw Jess.
Yeah, she's raw. She's real raw. There are tears that are about to burst forth. So we'll just keep this nice and relaxed, nice and chill. I just think it goes to show how engaging your sermon was that Mark could relay it almost like picture perfect. Like, he knew exactly what it
was. Well, I mean, yes, it was either engaging or he was critiquing me so hard that that it's just seared in his mind.
And you'll never know.
Let's go with engaging. Let's go with engaging. Yeah.
That makes me feel better.
Alrighty, guys, let's jump into the big three.
All right, Matt. Well, one of the things, you know, that I thought was really helpful in your message was the distinction between focusing on ourselves as followers and focusing on the light of the world. So the idea that we can so often end up focusing on what we should do or shouldn't do or whatever it might be, rather than just following the light. So the first question is, why do we end up focusing on ourselves as followers? Like, what's the rationale behind that? And why do we do that rather than the light that we're following?
Mm. Yeah, like, I think that there are heaps of reasons why we do this and probably heaps of ways in which we're influenced by our world. Because I think that the idea of following the light, following Jesus, when that's not always clear around what that might look like or where that might be leading us. You know, I'm sure we've all had moments where it's like, okay, so I want to follow Jesus, but I'm yet to kind of figure out the finer details and the bigger picture of that. And, you know, but our world kind of goes, no, like, you want certainty, you want to know A, B, and C and everything within that. And so I think, you know, just the idea of following Jesus is very countercultural because it takes the control out of our hands and places it in someone else. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the big kind of cultural influences that I think we're facing a lot is this whole idea of everything that we do and kind of the indicators of success are around our own independence and our own ability to kind of control our destiny in a sense. And the more control you've got, the better you're going, the more successful you are. And then we've got Jesus and the whole idea of following the light. It's not about what we bring to the table. It's about what he's already done and kind of submitting to the light, submitting to Jesus and kind of what he calls us into. And that means waiting at times. You know, a few weeks back, I kind of shared about a time that God kind of called me into ministry and that he told me to wait and how that was really hard. And, you know, it would have been really easy for me to just kind of go, well, I've got qualifications and I can go get my own job. I don't need what God has in store for me. So that whole sense of submitting to and following the light sometimes means waiting for the light to kind of illuminate what's ahead. But it also means that sometimes what the light does illuminate is very different to what the world would kind of say is worthy and of value. And so again, we're kind of, and I think I mentioned this on Sunday, like sometimes it means looking different and it means kind of going in a different direction that our society doesn't necessarily see the value of. And so that can feel very confronting. And so all these messages from our world is, you know, you need to be able to do this, you need to be able to do that. It's all about independence, autonomy, a sense of control and certainty that you can kind of control for yourself and create for yourself. And then actually following Jesus is completely different to that. Mm-hmm. Particularly when the world doesn't really acknowledge the value of the light and the value of who Jesus is. You know, we live post-Christendom. Like, faith is not an integral part of what our world values. And so I think one of the reasons why we really focus on, well, what can I bring to the table, is because it's about what I can control, and that's kind of what we know based on our experience. In this world.
What do you think the distinction is between you? Because I think it feels to me like one of the pieces that makes this difficult and what you're chatting about is how binary we make it. Mm. Like and it's almost as if we conflate together following Jesus and being a Christian.
Yeah.
But I think one of the pieces that we're exploring a little bit as a community of faith in particular is that there's probably a bigger patch of ambiguity that you follow Jesus before you might say that you're a believer in Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think also then I think helps us then just follow after Jesus without assuming that I'm a believer and therefore as a believer there are all these things that, you know, I should pray more, give more, serve more, read my Bible, like all those sorts of things. And I suppose that's true,
but
I think part of what we're trying to get at is that longer period of following prior to in that sense.
And I think that's, again, like, I think our culture makes us very reactive to things. You know, we've got the pressure of time, and so we don't, you know, we're told that we don't have the time to kind of sit and look at that bigger picture and kind of see the ambiguity and rest in the ambiguity and just kind of exist in the gray. But rather we're just, you've got to make an assessment based on what's in front of you and respond accordingly. And I think that's another reason why we struggle to follow the light and rather, you know, we define following by what I can do, because it's like, well, I don't have time to kind of consider the ambiguity that faith sometimes presents to me. I can only respond to what's in front of me, and so that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And again, that kind of ties into the control thing. I think about it, and I don't know if this is a helpful analogy, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. Like, Mark, you and I talk about, you know, when it comes to our work, there are tasks and there are projects. Mm-hmm. And if you have a project on your to-do list, it tends to be too big and it just kind of sits on your to-do list. Mm. And you need to kind of break that down into tasks, things that you can kind of be chipping away at to contribute to the overall success of the project. Well, following Jesus is a project, but sometimes we treat it like a task. And so because we don't have everything kind of sorted beforehand, we can't react to it. Mm. And again, we think of it very binary. So it's like, well, I either believe or I don't. Well, I don't have everything laid out before me. I can't react in a way that brings the decision to believe. So I'm just going to stay on my to-do list. Mm. But you know, that's that whole imagery of following starts wherever you are. And the tasks that kind of, for lack of a better word, that kind of contribute to the overall picture of following Jesus are just those little steps of, you know, looking for the light, considering the light, considering who Jesus is, what he teaches, how he has kind of changed the way in which we engage with God and engage with faith, and then bit by bit kind of allowing that to shift the way that we respond, so that we can be a little bit more proactive in following Jesus as opposed to reactive. Mm. And I think also, you know, this was part of the message. It was a big part of the message. We choose not to like look to the light and follow the light because we think we need to be ready. And again, that's because we're reactive. It's because we want control. It's because, you know, our society is very individualistic. So it's all about us. It's all about what I can do and what I bring of value and worth. And so we just kind of transfer that onto faith and kind of say, well, again, I can't earn anything. Well, I can't gain anything without earning it first. And so we just ultimately lie to ourselves and keep ourselves in the dark by believing that, well, I'm not ready. And I just hear that statement said time and time and time again. And the reality is, by
people who don't know Jesus or haven't begun to follow Jesus, or like, who do you hear that phrase?
I hear it from people who are on a journey of faith, who are exploring Jesus, and who I would even say have made a decision to believe in Jesus, but they still feel this sense of, but I'm not ready. Mm. You know, you hear it in with like baptism a lot. You need to be perfect in order to make that declaration of faith to kind of say that I believe to that degree. It's like, actually, like if you look at the scriptures, if you look at the gospels, people like in that moment where they were like, yep, this is what I'm committing my life to, that's when they got baptized. Yeah. But again, it's that whole mentality of, no, I need to be ready before I'm able to kind of take that next step of faith. It's like, no, you just need to take the next step of faith and you will find that you will become ready. So yeah, that's my two cents.
It's just easier, isn't it, as well, to look at other followers around you and kind of mimic or copy how they're following Jesus. Or, you know, we hear it all the time when people, you know, but what's the rule? What's the line?
Yeah.
What do I need to do? Because that's so clear cut and that's what we like.
Yeah.
But actually sitting down and thinking about this, you know, this man who lived 2,000 years ago, how did he live? How can I follow him? Is a lot harder to do.
Yeah.
And takes a lot of that.
I think that's absolutely right. Like that comparison game is really unhelpful, but I think it's ripe within churches. Mm. Like I remember when I first came to church, you know, I was 19. I was kind of, I'd been following Jesus for a couple of years, but never had a church communion. I came into this space and everyone just looked like they had it together. It's because we present this, yes, I am the right kind of Christian. Mm. I'm kind of speaking universally. It's not a universal truth, but, and I think we actually need to get more comfortable, with kind of saying, actually, yeah, like this is a journey and it's not about being ready. It's about being willing. And I'm seeking to follow. I'm seeking to kind of discern what the light is shining on in my life so that I can best know Jesus. And sometimes I stumble and sometimes I get it wrong and sometimes I completely rebel. And we talk about vulnerability a lot. And we talk about in from the perspective of it's something that we want and it's something that we value. And it's something that for a lot of Christians would be really helpful if we saw it a bit more in our community, and yet we don't do it.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's that mentality of, well, I need to be ready. I need to be the right kind of person. And so I'm just going to project that until that happens, because heaven forbid anyone realize that I fall short on the reg. Mm. Like, and that comparison game, I think, again, kind of plays into that mentality of, well, I can't start following Jesus yet because look at how good everyone else is. Like they're followers of Jesus. I'm just this scumbag over here who's totally got sin in his life and couldn't possibly talk about it, couldn't possibly come to Jesus and repent of it. Like that was the first like 5 years of my faith journey was just like, I am scum. I suck. I do not have everything sorted. And so I wouldn't pray because I thought I wasn't worthy enough to pray. I didn't think that I could come and speak to the creator of the universe if I had sin in my life. And so I always had sin in my life. Yeah. So I never prayed. It was this horrible perpetuating cycle.
Yeah. But we've all been there. Like, definitely.
And we need to break that mentality because, following is about taking that first step where you're at, and we just need to be a little bit more open about, well, this is where I'm at. Mm-hmm. This is the position that I'm in, and this is where I'm taking that first step from. And when we actually have that vulnerability, when we have that openness and that realness with community, that's when community is best able to thrive, I think. I think it's also when community is best able to rally and keep each other accountable and support, and we're able to have fellowship because we're actually talking about the realness of faith. We're talking about the realness of following Jesus. And we're talking about the fact that sometimes, yes, the light is bright and the light is obvious, but getting there is hard. Sometimes we do kind of veer off into the darkness, and we need to be honest about that and not compare ourselves to, you know, to an unrealistic kind of
that,
level.
That perfect Christian doesn't exist.
No.
We've just made them up.
Well, he does, and his name was Christ. and we will never be that kind of perfect on this side of heaven. So I think we just need to own that.
Very good. Alrighty, let's jump into question number two. So Matt, we've established there's this kind of spectrum or this journey of faith, and we may, you know, start to follow Jesus, but don't actually get to the point of believing, or, you know, don't start to see change in our life or something like that. But the congregation wants to know, if we start following Jesus where we're at, what point should there be actual changes in our lives? Or in other words, when should we begin thinking about ourselves as followers?
Yeah. This question reminded me of maybe about 10 or so years ago, there was this huge video on YouTube that kind of went viral because everyone was like, yes, that's what it is to be a Christian. It was like, I'm a follower, not a fan. Did you guys ever? Yeah. Yep. Classic. It was a classic. Yeah. It was a classic for the youth groups. It was a classic of scripture.
I didn't see it.
Showing your age rater. That's fine. So YouTube's on the internet.
Yeah. Well, there's my first problem.
So anyway, it was this whole, you know, it's the whole premise of this guy kind of confessing and kind of talking about his experience where he was a fan of Jesus. He kind of looked at Jesus and was like, hey, like I see this guy as bringing value and I like what he talks about, but I'm kind of standing on the sideline. I'm not really participating in the game.
I think I read the book.
Oh, there you go. Oh, of course you did. Of course. And the book's always better than the movie, so whatever.
That was the implied judgment.
But this whole idea that the fan kind of watches from the sideline, and that to be a follower is to get involved and to start playing the game and participating with what Jesus is doing. And I really love that imagery, but I actually think the journey of faith kind of goes one step further. I think we can start as a fan. We can kind of, and I think that's how a lot of people will start. They kind of notice Jesus and they're like, okay, there's something different about this guy. Maybe they can see Jesus in other Christians and they're like, okay, you're different because of the faith that you have in this person. I'm interested to learn more. I'm interested, you know, from my safe space to just kind of consider this and mull over this and maybe look into it a little bit more. And then you start following. And I think that's at the point where you start kind of testing the waters a little bit. You know, you start to reflect Jesus even before a decision of faith. You start to participate in what he's doing, sometimes unconsciously. Like I think that there are plenty of non-Christians that I know in my life who follow Jesus because they reflect Jesus in such incredible ways. And then I think it gets to a point of faith because you can follow without faith, but you do get to a point where faith then becomes a critical kind of crisis point. And I think the moment, to kind of overly simplify it, of where you kind of go, okay, I'm going to call myself a follower of Jesus. I'm going to actually declare that he is Lord. I'm actually going to acknowledge who he is and live accordingly, is when you realize that what you believe needs to be reflected in how you live. It is that, and I think that's the thing, and I think that's the beautiful nature of being able to follow before you believe, is because you get to start to explore faith, you get to start living it out without kind of having all the answers, without knowing everything, without fully understanding it. Jesus invites us into that, but there will come a point where you kind of have a bit of a crisis of faith and you kind of look around your life and you go, okay, like I actually believe this now. And I believe that this is now going to start changing my life and needs to change my life and the way that I live. And I think what's beautiful about faith and about believing in Jesus is that's still not the point where everything needs to make sense. That's still not the point where you need to be the right type of Christian or the right kind of perfect. There's like the journey continues. And again, you know, to go back to this whole binary perception of faith, you know, you're either a believer or you're not. But, you know, we talk about this heaps at GBC. Like faith is a journey. And, you know, if there are 20 points along the journey, 20 milestones, and a declaration of faith is 10, like you've still got plenty of steps to go after that point where you continue to be transformed, you start to, you know, be used by God, participating in his mission with the intention of wanting to see disciples made, with the intention of wanting to share the light that you now declare that you believe.
I'm reminded a little bit of the distinction, though, between a bounded and an open set. I remember reading this, it was in a discipleship book, and I found it really helpful. Because
is that a sport reference? Or
no.
Oh, okay.
I think it's actually mathematical.
Oh, okay. And another reason why I didn't.
Yeah, originally, but or that's the language that's used, but it's also used in social sciences. So the whole idea is how do people kind of, if it's a bounded set, socially speaking, then people cross a line and then they're in. Mm. And once you're in, and that's all there is to it. And
you're one of us.
To some degree. And I think that often communities of faith are bounded. Mm. And so people make that decision of faith and then you're in. And that's basically all we kind of talk about then. You're in, are you in or are you out?
Yep.
Do you believe or don't you believe? Are you a Christian or not a Christian? Do you have faith or not? And yet they talk about an open set as being the focus is not on the boundary, but actually on the center. And if Jesus is at the center, then our life of discipleship is not so much about crossing boundaries, about I wasn't holy, now I am. Mm. I didn't know enough, now I do. I didn't pray, but now I do. To just how close are you to Jesus?
Yeah.
And that then allows us to talk about our life of faith as an open set.
Yeah.
Because you can believe in Jesus and yet not be particularly close to him. Right? Like, you know, either in attitude or lifestyle or whatever the case might be. And so I think that's a really helpful way then to talk about following Jesus, even for people who have a long time ago perhaps placed their faith in Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, kind of going, yeah, I said the prayer, I got baptized.
I'm in the club.
Yeah, it's kind of, and we see this in all of our relationships, right? There are certain friendships that we have, you know, that you kind of come and go a little bit. Like there are times when you're really close and times when you're a little bit distant. And I think that can happen in our relationship with Jesus as well.
Yeah.
And to talk about it as an open set in that sense of like, are you closer to the middle than you were? Like, are you nearer the light? And you think about the fire, you know, like a campfire kind of thing. That's a good example of the open set, right? So there's some people who are right up close to it because they want to
toasty warm,
cooking
the marshmallows,
really warm, cooking the marshmallows,
eyebrows.
There are people kind of on the outer of that who, you know, still warm enough, but they are a little bit shrouded in the dark. And then there are people who are kind of even beyond that because they're having a deep and meaningful with somebody, you know, like, you know, whatever the case might
Kumbaya.
Be.
Kumbaya.
Yeah, that's right. But I think if we think about, and all of them are around the fire, like all of them part of the party or part of the group, but the question is one of closeness. You know, the analogy falls down a bit because, you know, I suppose what we'd be saying is if you're right up close toasting your marshmallows, you're better than the people who are, you know, like, so I think you'd want to be careful about that. But I think some of the language of, you know, open sets can be helpful for that journey metaphor to be used beyond the point of faith.
And I think also, what was it,
bounded
sets? Like, I think when you think about considering faith and following Jesus as a bounded set, again, that's where I think we could kind of connect those unhelpful mentalities of I need to be ready, I need to be perfect, I need to have control, I need to have the full understanding.
Yeah, and the boundaries, though, become the point of focus.
Exactly.
Right?
When do I cross the line?
When do I cross the line?
And again, it's about what I can do to do that. Yep. Whereas the open set is just, I'm just getting closer. Like, I'm just taking steps closer, but the focus is on, the center point.
Yeah, focus remains on Jesus rather than on the boundaries. And again, some of those boundaries I think that we have constructed are useful ones, right? Like if you place your faith in Jesus and you're part of the community of faith, then there is certain behavior that we would expect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of that's reasonable and all of those sorts of things. But I think, you know, your experience earlier I think is quite common for Christians of we kind of fill in the boundary, right? We kind of go, okay, this is obviously a bounded set, right? Even if we don't, think about it in those terms, there's obviously going to be a boundary here to be in, and then we fill in what that means.
Yeah.
And we can end up making the boundaries much, much bigger than anyone in the community of faith intends.
Yeah.
Sometimes the community of faith makes it worse, but, you know.
Yeah.
Bless. There's always that too.
Yeah, so. And I think the thing that I love about that open set idea is the inclusivity of it. It's that, again, and this is where you get the vulnerability. This is where we're able to kind of strip away that comparison mentality because it's like, hey, we're all heading towards the light. We're all heading towards the campfire. We're all trying to get there. Let's do it together. Let's learn together. Let's support one another. Let's keep each other accountable. Yeah.
I think it also provides like variation and diversity, because you could have someone who is quite intensely following Jesus, very close to the light, still hasn't come to the point of faith.
Yeah.
You know, but is experimenting with, I'm going to live how Jesus wants me to live, and I'm really going to kind of put this to the test.
Yeah.
Don't believe yet, but I'm, you know, I'm right up close.
Yeah.
I'm as close. So I think there's some value in that. And you can have people who've been Christians for a long time who are miles away from the light.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And just imagine the discipleship discussions that you have in that. Like if we're sharing those experiences, if we're sharing those journeys rather than just presenting
the Sunday best. It becomes very different. Like you know, instead of saying, how's your relationship with Jesus? Which people answer with, well, I haven't read my Bible this week. That's not what I ask.
Yeah.
You know, but if we began to say, you know, like on a scale of 1 to 10,
yeah,
you know, 1 being very far away, 10 being super tight.
Mm.
Are you closer this, like, where are you? Well, I'm a 7. Okay, well, are you closer than you were a month ago or are you farther away? Those become the critical discipleship questions, you know, which then leads into the conversations about, all right, you feel farther away. How can I help? You know, what can we do to, you know, take a step closer to Jesus rather than farther away?
Yeah, that's good. I feel like my answer kind of led Mark to that place. I just feel like everyone needs to know.
Oh, yeah.
He's not carrying me through this Big 3 podcast. I definitely contributed. I needed that to be said. I need it to be acknowledged.
It's true.
I'm just sitting here almost falling asleep, just enjoying the conversation between the two of you. So I appreciate the discussion that's being had. All right, let's get stuck into question 3.
So you really played on the metaphor, which is obviously out of the text itself, and significant one in John about the light. And you made, I think, a really kind of helpful point about that. If it's really dark, even a little bit of light goes a long way. You know, it's the night light. Like a night light in and of itself is usually a really weak light, but in the middle of the night, it's more than enough to get you to the bathroom and you know, or to the kid's bedroom or wherever you need to be. And at the same time, then you talked about, it was almost a throwaway at the end about how a bright light can be kind of blinding and disorienting. It takes us a while to kind of see. And I thought that was really interesting, you know, given our conversation about moving nearer or farther from Jesus, from the light. But the question is, so if that's the case, how do we focus on the light of Jesus without blinding ourselves? And I guess this is, it feels to me a little bit like, how do we make sure that we're close enough to the light, you know, and allowing it to illuminate our lives as we're following?
Well, I think like what I was trying to get at as I kind of just relived my experience of flicking on a light and kind of having a moment up on the platform on Sunday of being blinded is that whole idea that it takes time to adjust and it's okay to need time to adjust. And I think, again, that's that whole that ties into that whole mentality of, no, I need to get here. And it's like, no, actually the following is actually about adjusting to the light. And that each step you take towards Jesus, towards the light, it gets a little bit brighter. And then you need to give yourself time to adjust to that light, to learn in that space, to be crafted and refined and transformed by Jesus from that distance to the light before you can then take the next step. I think sometimes, you know, and it, you know, this is biblical. It's known as, you know, the good race, like not the sprint. Like it takes time, and we need to understand that we shouldn't always expect it at once. We're not going to have, well, don't say not, because obviously there are people who have, and we see people in scripture who do have the, I'm in the dark, and then boom, Jesus like just turned on the light. And, you know, I think of Saul, named Paul, like he literally was blinded by the light. He was blind for 3 days, and then the little scabbies fell out and he could see again. A beautiful imagery, particularly if you're listening to this in the morning while you eat your cornflakes.
Because it looked just like that.
Because it looked just like that. So like obviously there are people who have that just profound revelation in that moment. But, you know, the stories that I hear people share and the journeys that I see people living out is more that, you know, progressive kind of, I'm just slowly opening my eyes and I'm letting them adjust, and then I open them a little bit more and then I let them adjust. And if the light is revelation, mm-hmm. if the light is the word, then it's about just taking those bite-sized chunks of knowing God and who he is and what his character is and what he's doing in the world, and giving yourself time to kind of chew on it before taking the next bite, taking the next step.
Does it work the other way then? So is it possible that we basically get content with having just a little bit of light because it allows us to just get around in the darkness?
Yeah, absolutely.
And do we then need to not just kind of be kind to ourselves in the sense of kind of going, yeah, it takes a while to adjust as you get closer to Jesus, or however you want to work the metaphor, but can it, like, what would be the signs that someone had become complacent and was just kind of comfortable with the dusk?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice Himalayan salt lamp. Nice pink hue to the room.
Feels so warm and toasty. Well, ultimately, like, that's the Pharisees, isn't it? Like, he's a group of people who, for actually really, really good reasons, became sticklers for the law, right? Like, I did church history, and gosh, I'm saying this in front of the church history lecturer, so this is a risky move. But I remember reading about how kind of the Pharisees were kind of birthed, and it was this whole it was them trying to ensure that the Jewish faith was not being diluted. I think it was Hellenism. Am I right?
Yeah,
Am I right? Do I get the nuts? Where, like, just different.
Wait till the end to see how we go.
I'm so concerned. I'm so tense right now. I'm sweating. But it was this whole idea of, like, different nations and different societies were just kind of bringing their own spiritualities and their own expressions of spirituality and their own practices, and it was kind of diluting faith. And so the Pharisees were like, no, this is the law of Moses. This is what it is to follow the one true God, and we're not going to allow it to be diluted. Am I right?
Well, P's make degrees.
Yes. So. Yes, we'll take it. That's all I need. We'll so, like,
broadly speaking.
Listen, it was...
The views of the pastor are not actually the views of the
But so, like, you know, they wanted to be close to the light, right? But they did get comfortable. They did kind of then just, you know, they got into the routine of rituals and of systems and structures that kind of meant that they were blind to, you know, Jesus. And we see that because the whole way through their ministry, they're never able to really understand and grasp the truth that he is who he says he is.
It's almost as if it's a different light source for them, though. Like, I think for them, there was the law. Like, the law was the light. And that's why they studied it so much, because that's where there's the light of life. Mm. And then Jesus comes along saying, well, yeah, but.
But it's actually me, you
welcome
guys.
To the LED, you know, like, you know, but I think, yeah.
And I think we, you know, we can get comfortable. We can kind of go, oh, this is enough for me to see. Mm. This is enough for me to say that I'm in the light. This is enough for me to say that I'm following the light. But I think the reality is that being in the light, if the light is the word and the word is revelation, which it is, it's not an if, it is.
Wow, you gave me the eyebrows there.
Yeah, like, I did give you the eyebrows.
Prove me wrong,
yeah.
Eyebrows.
Come at me, radar.
That's what those were.
This theology I know.
I'm suspicious.
Then the reality is that living in the light and continuing to step close to the light means new things being revealed. To go back to your original question, how can we know? If you look around and you're like, I've not learned anything new about God, or if you think that you know everything there is to know about following God, then I'm telling you right now, you've stopped walking towards the light. Like, there should always be newness in what you experience of God and how that transforms your life. And if you look around and go, nah, I don't see a lot of new in my journey of faith, then it probably means that you've stopped walking towards the light. It doesn't mean that you're in the darkness. It just means that you've gotten to a point, whether intentionally or not, where the Himalayan sea salt lamp is just the vibe that you want. But the reality is, is it? Not for me. But But yeah, so I think, you know, and we have seasons of that. Mm. Like, I think we can all fall into that. I know myself, like, and you know, I was going to talk about this in the message, but didn't have time. But you know, I know, like, even in my job, you know, I work for a church, and so faith can be a part of just what I do. But where is it actually? Where am I actually having intentional devotional time and intentional time meeting with God so that I personally am transformed? That's something I've kind of become aware of this year, and I'm like, actually, I need to be seeking out the new, because I've just kind of allowed my job to be my faith, and that's not enough. That's not following Jesus. So, you know, it's asking those questions of yourself and kind of taking an honest look at yourself. Mm. I think sometimes, you know, we're just really good at lying to ourselves and going, no, it's all good. But if we actually had a real look.
Well, or our eyes get accustomed to the darkness that we're in, the murkiness that we're in. Mm. So I have to say that I think it was during the sermon, I actually thought of the that Mythbusters episode where they tested eye patches, pirate eye patches. Because the whole theory was that they'd wear an eye patch so that their eye would always be, they could flick it up if they went into a dark space, and they came out in the light, it would adjust really quickly, and they tested it all. And
did it work?
Actually, yeah, it did. Oh. It did. So like there was actually a functionality to the, so I was thinking about like the pirate eye patch.
So is that why they were wore to Jesus. Eye patches?
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember which way it went.
Wow. Mythbusters, what a time.
Yeah, because you know, if you come in from the really bright outside, you go into something dark, mm-hmm. you just can't.
Yeah.
See, well, that they could just flip the patch up and it's like, yep, I can see now.
Amazing.
So
what a time.
Mythbusters, that took me back to year 9 science just then, and I enjoyed the trip.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with the sermon, but I did.
So we're all wearing eye patches, is what you're saying.
This fleeting moment of like, arr, I'm following Jesus, you know. Got my eye patch of faith.
The eye patch isn't a good thing. It's not what we want.
No,
right?
I know. It's just, I don't think I dwelt very long on it, but you know.
Okay, very good. Well, to bring it back to the question, if I
well
may.
Done. Oh,
thank
well
you.
Done.
Just to rein this in, I think we always just need to be expecting something new. I think, you know, that's what it means to, you know, to actually just be slowly adjusting our eyes to Jesus. Mm. It means always expecting something new and stepping into that something new and not expecting to just have the flick of the switch moment. And I think just trusting also that God will reveal to each of us what we need when we need it for what we need. He doesn't want to overwhelm us unless he does, like Saul, for big reasons. But yeah, like there's an opportunity to trust that what we're seeing is what we need at that moment, but that there will always be more. Awesome. There you go.
Great. Good ending point.
Thank you. Just Raiders just going rogue over there with Mythbusters. I just felt like I needed to bring it back here.
And you did. Beautiful closing
Thank you.
Statement.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the firing end of the podcast, Matt.
You guys enjoy that way too much, I find, me being in this seat.
I love it. I love it so much. The like glances over to Mark. Am I preaching the truth? Yeah. It's so good.
Where's the heresy bell?
And branching out into church history, like just kind
of,
you know.
That was a wonderful,
well, yeah, I don't think I'll do
ride.
That again after that response.
Making some stuff up and dropping some terms you heard once. And,
yeah. I glanced a paragraph one time and now I'm preaching about it on a podcast.
Hey, that's more than I've done for church history. So well done. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
See you guys.
All right, Mark, anything out of that you want to clarify of what Matt said or anything that you felt was...
I'll take a whole other podcast. No. I mean, I think that discussion about the moving closer to the light and kind of the expectation of something new, I think was, I think that's a really good thing to reflect on. Like there are seasons when, you know, it's a little bit dry or we're not learning in leaps and bounds. But if you get to a point where you think, oh, it's been months since I've had kind of any sort of fresh experience, then there's probably something to kind of think about in that. And just, you know, I think the conversation about moving closer to the light is a pretty valuable one for us.
Yeah. Mm. And we can all get stuck in those moments of dryness and that's, I think, where the vulnerability comes with your community, knowing that that's okay. We've all been at those points. And so how can we kind of help each other step by step move closer?
And there may even be a time, you know, like you think about relationships in general, there's a time when relationships I mean, you can't be intensely in relationship with people all the time. Mm. Like, I think there's a natural rhythm as well to our relationship with Jesus, you know, that you'd be, you know, closer and a little bit farther away. But the issue is really about when is it problematic?
Yeah.
Like, when am I drifting and when am I just kind of, you know, in that kind of cycle or rhythm where, you know, you're adjusting to the new truth or whatever the case might be. So I think those are interesting questions. What stood out for you?
Yeah, I think there's a similar kind of thing around that. I think what you said just then about like drifting, I think that's really important that with these moments where we can just drop the ball and take our hands off the steering wheel and kind of steer off to one side. But also there are times where you just intentionally run away and you just don't want a bar of it. There's moments where you're like, I just need a break. I just need a hot second. And so, yeah, seeing like why that's happening or where that's coming from and kind of trying to step back in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I think trend lines feel like an important, like a kind of important reflection. Like, am I trending closer to Jesus or farther from Jesus? You know, like there'll be moments in a day and days in a week and weeks in a month where you'll be either moving closer or moving farther away. But what's the trend?
Yeah,
like are you moving farther away or are you moving closer? And I think that those, again, they just give us it's a very different framework rather than did you read your Bible this week?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Because even if I did, there's no guarantee that I got anything out of it or that you know, God spoke to me. But yeah, I ticked the box. So boundary crossed, so I must be fine. So I think there's some real grist for the mill in that conversation for us.
Yeah, for sure. Great challenge. Alrighty, well, beautiful. Thank you, Mark, for joining us.
Thanks, Jess.
Always a pleasure. Always a joy.
And well done staying awake. And,
yeah,
you know,
thank you. Next week,
teary.
I think I'll be looking even more raw, as you put it. So watch this space. Alrighty, guys. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure you're there at one of our services on Sunday and you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Thanks for joining us this week on the Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small and no question too big.